This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Opening day. At this moment, every fan from every team feels exactly the same way at the exact same time. Like anything is possible. And on Arena Club, home of the original Slab Pack, you can rip open that feeling anytime you want. All the excitement, the hope and anticipation, the love of the hobby and love of the game. It's right there in your hand. Have an opening day every day. Let the chase begin at arenaclub.com.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
CBS Sports Radio.
Listening to the Vince Quinn Show, weekend overnights on CBS Sports Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to another rendition of a fine morning show here on CBS Sports Radio. I'm Vince Quinn. James Graceffo is always producing this fine program. Good evening, or excuse me, good morning, Graceffo.
Hi, Vince. How are you?
There you go. We were just arguing before we started.
No, we weren't. We just moved. We just turned the page. That never happened.
Yeah, it never happened. We'll talk in. It was a sports argument. So we'll be talking about it a little bit later. But we were getting into it about the Chargers and stadiums, and I'll tell you why in a little bit. But a lot of different things, obviously, going on. I mean, it's sports in the modern age. There's always a billion things going on, and there's so much ground to cover. Let's start with, by the way, just an immensely weird week for the Utah Jazz, because my goodness, the status of the Jazz has been defined in so many different ways over the course of really the last 5 days, 4 days. Hasn't been long. There's been a lot of things happening with the Jazz. Vince, what's been happening with the Jazz? Well, that's a good question. Let me explain that. So, first off, Jazz have the best record in the NBA. If you're not paying that much attention, that might surprise you, but the Jazz have been damn good. I mean, monster win streaks. They've beaten some good teams. They've split with the Nuggets. They've beaten the Clippers. They've beaten the Bucks. Like, they've played some pretty solid teams and won those games. But as much as they've got the best record in the NBA, you get to a game just a couple of nights ago. I think it was Wednesday night, and they were playing the Sixers. Now, the Sixers, best record in the East. So they square off. It's a dramatic game. End of the fourth quarter. Time is ticking. Embiid hits a three. It's a totally ridiculous three. Sends it to overtime. There's a lot of stuff that happens in overtime. Basically, the Sixers go off. The Jazz get frustrated. Donovan Mitchell gets ejected from the game, and the Jazz lose. Now, after the game, which obviously the status of the best team in the West versus the best team in the East, you got a lot of stuff going on there about who's the best team in the league, and we will get to that. But the way in which the Jazz lost and the way in which Donovan Mitchell just exploded at the end of that game, highlights a little bit about the character of the Jazz. And here's the thing is, after the game, after getting ejected, Donovan Mitchell was absolutely furious.
The question is, can we do it? Can we sustain it? Are we for real number one? Like, yeah, the hell we are. And it's getting ridiculous, KK. This is what's happening. You know what I mean? We have a whole second half of the season to go and get ready for, but like, I'm sick of it. To be honest with you, we all are.
He's blaming the refs. He blamed the refs. He did it. It's a long rant, by the way. That's a small piece of a long rant. He went on for a minute or two just talking about how they get disrespected and you can't have calls like that. And really, he's blowing things out of proportion. Rudy Gobert, after the game, had a long diatribe, something to the effect of, hey, we're a small market team and the NBA is out to get us because of that. And so we're going to have to fight against it. So the Jazz go from, you know, being the best team in the NBA, best record. All right, well, now they lose this game to the Sixers. Now they're throwing out all of these gripes. Now they're throwing out all of these grievances that really just felt whiny. It felt like they were taking things a little harder than they should have. Because here's the thing. When you're a professional in the NBA, yeah, do you get occasionally a bad call here or there? Yes. But the Jazz are starting to develop and really tell you themselves that they believe the league is actively working against them. They believe that the league is conspiring to hold them back. And there are ways to motivate yourself. Michael Jordan all the time, especially after the documentary, the whole, and I took that personally. There is some level of that that you can look at with the Jazz and go, yes, maybe they're just using this as fuel. But at some point, it just feels like they're out of touch. And so thinking about who they are as an organization, they are Donovan Mitchell. They are Rudy Gobert. In the NBA, you're your star players. That's who the league is. That's what they're about. It's all about the stars. They're the biggest impact players relative to any sport, period. Because think about it, right? In every game, seven-game series, you're in the NBA Finals. You're starters. You're going to play, what, 37 minutes in each of those games? That's what they do? So your impact on the court, offense, defense, for all of those minutes of a game, your stars matter more than anything. The Jazz are Mitchell and Gobert. And for these guys, the attitude just feels off, right? I get the record. I get the style of play. On some level, the Jazz have earned, they've gone on the traditional arc that you expect to see from an NBA team, right? I mean, adding Gobert, he establishes himself as one of the best defenders in the NBA. They draft Mitchell. He has a case for Rookie of the Year. He doesn't get it, and we'll get to that again in a second. And then as everything grows, you see the team getting better. They're a well-coached team. They go and add Mike Conley last year. They play an amazing series against the Nuggets that goes seven, last shot, final seconds. Mike Conley misses. They lose that series. Nuggets go on a run, crazy run, through the playoffs. And so to see the Jazz at this point, halfway through the NBA season, it's not exactly shocking, right? Like, I think we all know that the Jazz are a pretty good team. And they've been on the progression of what a good team goes through. For the NBA, you don't end up being amazing overnight. Unless you're one of those super teams that magically forms, you build, you grow, you get to the playoffs, then you get to the second round, then maybe you get to the conference finals, and you're going and winning the whole thing the next year. There's usually that kind of growth, or you're hanging around, and then you add that last piece. And for the Jazz, they're on that trajectory. But when you look at these two guys, when you look at the attitude of Donovan Mitchell, who through that Rookie of the Year campaign, he's wearing shirts that are anti-Ben Simmons, saying he's not a rookie because he missed his whole first year with an injury. When you see that kind of attitude, that's kind of who he is. When you see Rudy Gobert, these guys have been at odds with each other generally throughout their career. It hasn't been the most harmonious relationship. When the core of the team is Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert, do you believe that they can actually win a finals? When this is the identity of a team that feels like the league is actively out to get them right now. They are villains, but part of it is they're making themselves villains, right? I mean, are they an endearing team? There's a lot of teams I can look around the NBA and root for. Not my team, but I can look around and go, you know, hey, Portland Trailblazers, they're fun. I'd love to see the Trailblazers win a title at some point. Damian Lillard's fun. McCollum's fun. They've been around for a long time. I'd be happy to see that group win a title. Why not? I can get behind that. you can see teams in the East. For example, I don't think the Bucks are going to win the title, but I could root for the Bucks in a certain scenario. Yeah, like they keep getting kind of close. You've got Giannis there. Giannis, the fact that he signed a deal to stay in Milwaukee, he's a likable guy. And you look at that and go, okay, I could root for those guys. But Jazz are not that popular. Jazz are becoming villains. And here's where it goes to another level. Here's the thing where it really got bizarre is the All-Star draft. Now, Graceffo, I know you watched the draft. I didn't actually... Didn't you watch this or see the clips of it? You were talking about it a little bit before the show.
I saw the clips of it. I didn't sit there for the hour.
Okay, well, that's a smart move by you,
yeah.
which is how you handle a lot of events these days, right? Like, outside of the games themselves, or even, like, for me with fights, it's like, oh, man, big UFC or big boxing fights. I'm like, all right, I'll see the tweet, and then that's all I need to see. You know what I mean? So, watching the video, you get to the All-Star draft. It's what? LeBron James and Kevin Durant are the captains. They're picking all these different guys. So the last two players left are Rudy Gobert and Donovan Mitchell. So watching all of that, like, what was it like as it played out when you see Mitchell and Gobert sitting there as the last two guys?
Well, my opinion of it or watching it?
Well, what you gleaned from it, you know? So your opinion.
That no one around the league respects this team at all. that they are clearly an afterthought to everyone in the league. And obviously whatever LeBron decides to do is calculated. So maybe it's a shot at the Jazz in terms of, you know, you're not better than us, we don't even think about you. So, and to get Durant to go in on it with him was just, I don't want to say hilarious, but I guess it was funny in a way. So he obviously had Durant go in on it with him. If Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert are the last two guys there, don't you think it's some sort of setup? Like, it's clearly
a setup. It feels like it.
Like, there's no way guys like Nick Vucevic and Julius Randle should be picked before Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert. It's insanity. So, it's obviously a calculated move by LeBron in terms of, I don't respect you in any way, shape, or form.
And that's part of the thing that's so interesting about this, because you think of the modern NBA, is very political, and these guys are, in a lot of ways, they're friends with each other. They talk with each other. It's always recruiting. Hey, come to my team. Do this and that. And so for the NBA to be what it is today with these modern star athletes, and then there they go. They're like, yeah, let's exclude the Jazz and let's laugh at the Jazz. It tells you something. It definitely tells you something about the NBA. It tells you about where this team is right now. And so...
Yeah, it tells you the Jazz aren't at the cool kids table.
No, they're not. They're not at all. And that's the thing is, one, I'm curious if there's people out there that are rooting for the Jazz. Do you find them a likable team? Do you like Donovan Mitchell and Rudy Gobert? Is that a group that you get behind? Is it somebody that you'd love to see them win a title? How many teams would you rather see them win over? Because I ran down the whole list in the West, and I'm looking at the teams that actually have a shot. Like, the Spurs don't have a shot. I'm sorry. Okay, the Pelicans, the Grizzlies. I love the Grizzlies. I'm a massive fan of the Grizzlies. But I don't. There's no way they're winning a title, right? So you're looking at, like, the Clippers, the Nuggets, the Lakers, the Suns. There's so many other teams I can look at and go, you know, I'd rather see those teams win. For different reasons, I can make a case of why I would rather see one of those teams win than the Jazz. Jazz are one of the last teams that I would root for that realistically have a chance to win. I don't like them. I just, as a guy that watches basketball, seeing all the star players, you like people, you don't like others, I'm not a Jazz guy. I'm not a fan of Mitchell. I'm not a fan of Gobert. And seeing the way they, you know, complain and think the whole world's out to get them, maybe they're right, but I don't believe it. I just think they're not that likable. Now, the other question is, how good are they, right? Like, do you believe that the Jazz are a legitimate title contender? Do you think they can actually win it? They're the best record in the NBA right now. Are they the best team in the NBA? 855-212-4227. I see them as a team that could get to the conference finals, but I have a hard time believing that they're a finals-winning team. I mean, it's just weird to have a team that their mentality... Because think about this. We're in the middle of the regular season, okay? This time of year doesn't matter. This isn't crunch time. This isn't take every single game as seriously as you possibly can, right? And they already believe that the league, and the officials specifically, are actively against them and trying to hold them back from winning games. They're trying to slow down the Jazz and take away their seeding and prevent them from winning a title. I just don't know how that perseveres in the playoffs, right? It's a weird thing to think, yeah, hey, if they're down a couple of games in the finals, they're not going to go, oh, well, the refs have cost us this game and that. What's the point? It's self-defeating. That's where they're at right now. So when these are your guys, Mitchell and Gobert, and you got to buy into those guys, I get they're a really good team. They've earned the seat of being at the table of some of the best teams in the NBA. But are they the best team? Do you believe they're an actual finals winner right now? And the other thing is, and it's kind of nice at this point in the season to have this conversation, but if you don't believe that the Jazz are the best team in the NBA, who is? Because it's not clear-cut right now. There's a lot of really great teams all across the league, but it doesn't quite feel as lopsided as typical years do. A lot of years, hey, it's two teams, right? It's a collision course between whatever team LeBron's on and the Warriors, for example. Doesn't have that vibe right now. You can make a case if you want to for four teams or so in the East. You can make a case for three or four teams in the West. And so it feels wide open. So I would just love to talk to you a little bit about who you think the best team in the NBA is. How do you feel about the Jazz? Do you believe in that star duo that they have? Is that something you root for? 855-212-4227. That's how you join the show. 855-212-4227. There's going to be a lot of other things we get through over the course of this morning. It's a morning show. And, like, there's some crazy stuff going on in Houston, and it doesn't have to do with the Texans. I know we're on in Houston, and people in Houston, I'll love to talk to you in about an hour from now. J.J. Watt signed with the Cardinals? The hell is that? Like, that was not what I expected at all. And that was pretty disappointing. So we'll be getting to that a little bit later. There's a lot of stuff. Space Jam popped up. Space Jam 2. So that's the hard-hitting sports talk you die for. But, yeah, we'll get to that at some point. So there's a lot of things to get into. But for right now, how do you feel about the Jazz? Are they a villain to you? Or do you root for them? And who do you think's the best team in the NBA? 855-212-4227. I'm Vince Quinn. You can always get in at It's Vince Quinn. It's all one word, at It's Vince Quinn on Twitter, Instagram, Twitch. And that's all I got. When we come back, an update on the Russell Wilson situation, and it's a big one.
You're listening to The Vince Quinn Show on CBS Sports Radio. Listening to the Vince Quinn Show on CBS Sports Radio.
And we're coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. So asking people to start the show here, just how do you feel about the Jazz? Really weird week for them. Very strange. Complained about the refs, throwing out the league is against us and running a conspiracy in the middle of the regular season because we're a small market. Is there a bias against small market teams? Absolutely. Yes, there is a small market problem in the NBA. There's no doubt. Okay, but to believe that the league is getting the officials to call games against you in the regular season because you're a small market team, like, that's just nuts. Those are the kinds of things that are floating around now. Gobert was talking about that. So, weird spot for the Jazz. So, looking at Gobert, looking at Mitchell, who those guys are, that's the team. Obviously, they have other good players on that squad, but you are your superstars in the NBA. Those are the two superstars of the Jazz. Those are the two biggest names. And so, when that's your core, is that who you root for? Are they likable? Are they villains? Are they just not likable? That's one of the arguments I got on Twitter, by the way, at It's Vince Quinn, was basically, they're not villains. They're just not likable. You know, villains don't whine, was basically the argument, which I can understand that. So, yeah, maybe that's it. Maybe they're just not a likable team. But LeBron James, Kevin Durant, do the whole All-Star draft. They don't pick those guys. Just a very strange week for the Jazz. So I'd love your take on it, whether or not you think they're likable, somebody you're rooting for. 855-212-4227. That's how you join the show. Now, here's the other thing that's going on. With Russell Wilson, you have another development this week, and it's just telling you, I mean, each and every week I come on, and each and every week I feel like I got to say that it's getting closer to him getting out of town. Like, this is happening. This week, the development that happened a couple of days ago, it finally got me to the point where I've just accepted that he's gone. Over the last couple of weeks, and I think even last week when I was on here, the whole argument was, I think he wants to stay and make it work, right? Because he's been there forever. That's his whole career. That's the only place he's played as a pro. So when you're there for so long and you're looking around at the team and you're going, hey, I know all these guys. I believe in these guys. For example, DK Metcalf. I believe in DK Metcalf. I believe in, I don't know, Tyler Lockett. I believe in some of the defensive guys, Bobby Wagner, whoever it might be. And you want to stay. You want to work with that. Russell Wilson seems to have that mentality. He wants to stay. He wants to throw the ball more. And that's how he thinks he can get them over the hump. But Pete Carroll doesn't want to do that. It's a philosophical problem. He believes they should run. And so now you're at odds, right? And Wilson, through all these different things in the media and whatnot, trying to balance the scale in his favor, trying to have a power struggle and win that struggle to run the offense his way. Doesn't seem to be working. I don't think Pete Carroll's going to budge on this. And so you start to get the different whispers. You start to get the different attacks, trying to find ways to get out of town. His agent casually dropping a couple of different options of places that he could go to. And the thing that changed it, the thing that really tips this over to the point of, well, I don't think, like, Russell Wilson would be willing to get out of there, but he's not dying to get out of there. And for Seattle, okay, I can understand it's uncomfortable, but they're going to stomach this. Now they're picking up the phone and taking calls. Now they're entertaining actual offers for Russell Wilson. And it's over. It's over for them. It's not going to happen. So, Russell Wilson's going to go. That's where I'm at. I'm firmly in the camp that he's going to get traded. Because you don't start picking up the phone. First off, you don't pick it up with Russell Wilson unless you're actually going to really consider the idea. This has been going on for a couple of weeks. Now they're picking up the phone. It's built to this point. It didn't start at this point. If it was, because a lot of teams like to do this, a lot of teams, GMs, and there's really no harm in this. Hey, somebody calls and they go, listen, I understand you just signed Patrick Mahomes for $500 million, but let's just for bleeps and giggles, let's talk a little bit about trading Patrick Mahomes, huh? Like, you just, if you're just talking to talk, there's no harm done. That's not where Seattle's been. Now they're picking up the phone. So when you get to a point where they're pushed to this spot, something has changed. The dynamic has gotten worse, right? The rift is getting bigger. They haven't been able to figure this out. The other thing is, if you're a team that's getting on the phone and calling for Russell Wilson, you know what that price is, and you have some level in your head of entertaining it. Wilson is worth that. Teams will be desperate for it, and you're going to pay that price. He's Russell Wilson. So there's going to be a market for him. There will be teams that are willing to pay. And so with Seattle now listening, with enough teams interested, with him being the player that he is, it's very easy to see that Russell Wilson is going to go. It just feels like a matter of time. So 855-212-4227. That's how you get in, 855-212-4227. Let's go to Buck. Buck, you're on CBS Sports Radio. What's up?
Yeah, man. Listen up. First of all, I want to let you know I'm a big-time Sixers fan. And I've been watching the Jazz the whole year. Man, let me tell you, that team for real. Now, they were the agony team of last year when they lost that game by 1 point. I watched that. I'm saying this. I don't know whether they got a strife out against them, but it's going to be hell beating them. On any given night, they will shoot you off the damn pole. They got it like that. And people who haven't been watching them, and they feel that they paid their dues after last year. And the coach, it's a demeanor about that team. I feel them, even though the Sixers, we beat them at home this week. We had to go into overtime to defeat them. And I'm telling you, they're going to be reckoned with. Mad, and they got a chip on their shoulder, and I don't think it's rightfully so. After last year, after how they lost, man, that was the agony team of legend. And that's a progression about sports, too. When a team lose, the agony that they suffered. They suffered a lot of agony. They want it bad, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
The team to watch.
Okay. I agree that they want it, Buck, and thanks for the call. I agree they want it. It's just the attitude that goes around it. It's just this self-defeating, hey, the whole league is after us, and the refs are calling games against us intentionally because we're a small market team. Like, those are the kinds of things that you just shake your head at and go, like, what is going on here? What is the leadership here? And for Donovan Mitchell, I know how good of a player Donovan Mitchell is, right? He's a really good shooter, and he's got great numbers this year, and he's doing all the things you look for in a superstar. He's a guy that can, late in a game, hit a shot that wins it for you. But also, he can be a bit of a volume guy, and he can be streaky, right? It's just, like, in terms of the scorers of the NBA, the best scorers in the NBA, he's a tier behind some of the truly elite players. He's a really good player, and he's not the top-of-the-line MVP-caliber guy yet. Rudy Gobert is a really good defensive player, but that's what he does. And for those two guys together, is that a good enough duo? Is that better than LeBron and AD, for example? Is that better than Kawhi and Paul George? Maybe, because Paul George in the playoffs has been a mess. So maybe there. But right now, I look at the West, I go, okay, well, at the very least, I'm putting LeBron, Anthony Davis, and the Lakers, I'm putting them ahead of the Jazz. They'd win that series. I would be curious in another rematch here what it would look like, Jamal Murray and Jokic, because Jokic has been absolutely out of his mind. I mean, he's playing ridiculous MVP basketball. So when you're stacking up the superstars, I'd go with Jokic and Murray over Donovan Mitchell and Gobert. That's where I'm at. So that's part of it, right? You stack all these things up and you figure, all right, is the star power of the Jazz enough to make them the best team in the NBA? They got the best record. Are they the best team? 855-212-4227. That's how you get in. 855-212-4227. I'm Vince Quinn with you on CBS Sports Radio. And on the other side, there was a demolition. I just saw just very odd photos, unsettling photos of a stadium being demolished. And I want to talk about what could have been.
You're listening to the Vince Quinn Show on CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio. Listening to the Vince Quinn Show, weekend overnights on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, hour two of the show on CBS Sports Radio. And there's a great story of accidental brother versus brother. So it comes out, you know, about a week and a half ago that there's four teams that Russell Wilson's agent, he's like, yeah, you know, Russ doesn't want to get dealt. But if one of these four teams comes calling, he's happy to be there and he'll go in a heartbeat. Now, you had, let's see, the Raiders were one of those teams. It's really important. The Saints were one. Dallas was one. So, David Carr, former NFL quarterback, David Carr, now in the media, now does all sorts of analysis, writing, whatever. David Carr put out a piece that said, basically, if you're one of the four teams that you've got a chance to get Russell Wilson, you've been named as one of the four destinations that he's willing to go to, you need to make that trade ASAP, is pretty much what David Carr wrote. Now, it's hilarious because his brother is Derek Carr and happens to be playing quarterback for the Raiders. So you've got a guy who's writing that his own brother should be traded immediately for Russell Wilson. Now, once that happened and everybody kind of picked up on what was going on, there was a slight alteration to the article. But the idea that he wrote that and then changed it is hilarious. I mean, because ultimately he's right. He's right. You don't want to say it. It's your own brother. You don't want to go to your own brother and be like, listen, dude, they need to trade you immediately for Russell Wilson. Okay? That's not a cool thing to do with somebody's brother. But if you're the Raiders and you got a chance of Russell Wilson and trading Derek Carr is something you can do to do that, yes, absolutely. You're out of your mind. You're out of your mind to not do that. You have to. 100%. So, David Carr accidentally suggesting that Derek Carr should be traded on the spot. Absolutely hysterical little thing that happened over the course of this week. Now, if you want to get in, 855-212-4227. I want to get to the Rockets in just a minute, who just did the most confusing, ridiculous, sad thing over the course of this last week. But we have been talking a little bit about the Chargers, stadiums getting torn down, thinking about where that team was, where they are now. And if you want to talk about it, 855-212-4227, we've got Freddie in San Diego. What's going on, Freddie?
Hey, what's up, man? What's up? Yeah, dude, I was a lifelong Chargers fan, man, and it breaks my heart to see that stadium torn down. But, man, it was like a curse losing this franchise in a good way. It was like a curse being dropped from us. Yeah, dude, every week we were losing in heartbreaking ways, man. They were ripping our heart out. And then they go to L.A. and they act like we don't exist. It was the way they left. They were just like, oh, San Diego, thanks for the great years, but we're looking forward to the times in L.A. as if they were going to be embraced with open arms. It's a joke, man. I'm glad they're gone.
Yeah, and that's the thing. As a fan, so how big of a fan were you, Freddie? Were you watching every week?
Oh, huge, man. I'm a huge Padres and Chargers fan, and that's something to be really excited about nowadays with the Padres. But, dude, I'm telling you, man, I lived and breathed this team. We should have won at least two Super Bowls in the 2000s.
You had really great teams for a long time. Yeah, the 14-2 squad and being in the playoffs, deep in the conference championship games and whatnot. Like, they had opportunities, and they just couldn't get it together.
Who fires a 14-2 head coach, though? I mean, seriously. And they say, oh, this is going to help us win the Super Bowl. Like, it's a joke, man. You don't start over after going 14-2. This ownership is a joke. They're going to fail in L.A. And, again, they could be glad that, like, oh, yeah, L.A. is great for our brand. Nobody's going to care about them. They're, like, the 11th team on the list behind, like, minor league hockey. They have no chance at anyone caring about them, man. I'm just saying, bro. So, good. I know it's a great business move. But, man, I am glad to get rid of that curse. There are still people who are fans. I'm not one of them.
Yeah, and Freddie, I appreciate it, man. That's the thing, right, is Graceffo's argument is basically this is business. If you're an owner of a stadium and you can get somebody to give you a stadium for free or you can play in a stadium for free, the value of that, hundreds of millions, right? There's a lot of money. From an ownership standpoint, the business aspect of this, you're in it for business, it makes more sense to leave. You have a stadium. It's not nice. You try to get the local government to pay for it. They didn't pay for it. So money and common sense of business would tell you to leave. So that's what they did. So I understand that. The thing is, you do feel just for the average guy. The average guy that loves the team, that watches it every single week, team leaves because ultimately that's what it is, right? You talk about fan service and all those things, but it's business, and now your team is gone. They're playing in L.A. Nobody's there. Nobody cares, but they're making more money from being in L.A., so that's what you do. It's just a strange, it's a very strange thing. And figuring out what happens, does this actually lead to anything? Because that's something I don't have the track of right now, but they just left a couple of years ago to go to L.A., right? So that was huge because you have a local government standing up to the NFL and a very popular franchise because the Chargers sold. You know, they had fans. They had a diehard following. But stadium deals trump that. So when the local government stands up and goes, listen, we're not going to pay for this stadium. You got to pay for it yourself or you got to contribute more. And then they leave. That was a big deal. That's not common. And the question is, does anything change? Or is that a rare case? Was that a mistake from San Diego? Should they have kept the Chargers? Should they have fronted the money? See, like, you're smiling at yourself. Like, your argument would be basically they should have done it.
You don't want to be the politician that loses an NFL football team, bud. Like, sorry to break it to you. I have no idea who these people are. I don't care to know who they are because I have more important things going on in my life. But if a politician that, you know, was I was a constituent of, lost my football team, or you know, think of a place like Philadelphia or Pittsburgh or name any other great NFL city. If any of these politicians lost a football team because they didn't want to front money for a stadium, they'd be, like, hung in the streets.
Well, here's the other thing, though, because you're getting the owner, the person who is ultimately making the decision for their team, and the argument is, right, the billionaires spending money and them investing in their own stadium.
But not every NFL owner is a billionaire that owns a great, like, again.
Well, by virtue of owning an NFL franchise, you're a billionaire.
Right, but that's your own, but some guys, like Mark Davis and Dean Spanos, I believe, that's their only business. That's what they own. They're not Arthur Blank. They don't own Home Depot. They're not Stan Kroenke. They don't own Walmart. Like, if you're an NFL owner and your NFL, your main business is the NFL team, you're a billionaire only thanks to owning the team. So you don't have the gobs of money like Stan Kroenke to build a stadium in the city of LA for free. Like it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen. You think the Rooneys are billionaires because of any outside ventures? No, they're billionaires because they own the Steelers. Like, and they would never, ever, when Heinz Field becomes obsolete in 20 years from now or 15 years from now, you think the Steelers are leaving Pittsburgh? Are you insane? Or you think the Eagles, you think Jeffrey, I don't know if Jeffrey Lurie owns anything other than the Eagles. I don't know if he's a businessman to the level of Arthur Blank or Stan Kroenke. I don't know that. But if Jeffrey Lurie's only business is he owns the Eagles and this is it, there's no way. There's no way that if Jeffrey Lurie decided one day that Lincoln Financial Field was obsolete, politicians in Philadelphia the next day would say, oh, you got a bunch of land in the parking lot? Yeah, okay, do whatever you want. You really don't think that would happen? You really don't think it'd be an embarrassment to lose the Eagles in Philadelphia?
Well, because there's two sides of the argument, right? The local government argument is the money that goes into the city and doing the right thing for the people of the city financially. That is your job.
The right thing is keeping the Eagles
official.
In Philadelphia, for example. The right thing is keeping the Steelers in Pittsburgh. Because
well, yes.
If you don't, people are going to throw you out.
But you need to find mutual agreements, right? You need to find some level of agreeability and something that makes sense for both sides. So you have to make it work. For ownership, you need some kind of financial commitment that makes it work.
But these guys hold the golden goose. They hold an NFL football team.
Okay, so then you got to use some of that goose.
I'm going to demand whatever I want. And they're going to give it to me.
Okay, well then in that case you go somewhere else.
Because the Steelers and the Eagles and teams like this are institutions. You're talking about a laid-back city that clearly didn't care enough about NFL football. That chose to let their team walk away. What else do you want to say about it?
I'm saying there's two sides of the equation, typically. And for the Chargers, clearly, because I guess there was a vote. Because I don't remember all the exact details. Somebody just called in and said basically there was a city vote. Is that what happened?
Yeah, I guess there was a city vote, and his claim was that, you know, every transplant in San Diego that lives there now from other places voted, which I don't know how you would track that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know how you would even know that.
Yeah, that's just total.
And again, blame the people in your city then. Blame them. Don't blame the guy who, you know, is doing everything he can to get a stadium built, haggling with local politicians, and this local politician thinks, oh, I'm going to show the NFL. I'm going to show the NFL. Look at me. I'm Joe Bigwig at some San Diego local office, and I'm going to show the NFL that you can't do this to us. You know what the NFL does? See you bye. See you bye.
Yeah.
And they've done it to other cities before, and they'll do it to other cities again.
St. Louis, for example.
Right. So you don't think St. Louis would want an NFL football team back?
Oh, St. Louis is dying, and that's why XFL.
A year ago?
Yeah.
How many thousands of people went to an XFL game in St. Louis? They were the highest attended thing in St. Louis for that time period. They went to go see XFL football. You telling me they don't want a football team back?
Oh, they do.
Okay. But Stan Kroenke, who owns Walmart, decided, oh, I can make a ton more money in Los Angeles and I don't have to haggle with local politicians to get a stadium built. And if I can get another team to go with me, great. I'll even make more money because I have the Chargers as a tenant. You don't think Stan Kroenke landed in St. Louis and said, man, I can't wait to get out of here. The dome they were playing in was 30 years old.
Okay, but also he's the guy that you were talking about before that does have the money to fund their own stadium because he's got business elsewhere. Right?
Right. So you use that to your advantage, don't you?
Well, that's what all these guys do. Ultimately, it's the full-scale business decision.
But not everyone has that kind of money. Not everyone has the kind of money to say, I'm going to build a stadium.
And that's a fair point. But when you do have guys that do have that money to build the stadium and they also leave, it's just a bad place to be as a regular guy. Because you're holding all the pressure is put on the local government, but the teams have an obligation to put in some commitment.
Let's boil it down to the simplest of arguments. Do you think the NFL cares about the regular guy?
No.
Case closed.
Well, yeah. And that's ultimately what I'm getting at. So
Okay, get in line in terms of the people that don't care about the regular guy for the NFL. Nobody in the world cares about the regular guy.
Except for everybody out here who's a regular guy.
Are you
a regular guy?
I don't care about the look.
Do you care about yourself?
I don't care about the Charger fan. I don't care about the Charger fan that lost their team because they didn't want to step up to help them stay. I don't care about him.
Okay, well he
doesn't
won't care
impact
about
my
you
day
if you
one
lose
way
the Jets.
Or the other. What?
If you lose the Jets,
it'll
they
never
won't care
happen.
About
but
you?
Okay, I'll entertain it. It'll never happen. Never. Never in a million years.
Okay.
You think a New York politician would fight the NFL?
Yeah. I could see any politician.
A New Jersey politician would fight the NFL?
Yes. I don't think it'd be popular, but I can see it happening.
You're
absolutely.
Out of your mind.
Absolutely.
You're out of your mind.
And those people would be considered out of their mind, but that doesn't mean it can't happen, and it won't happen.
You're out of your mind.
Okay.
There's no chance that legacy franchises like this will ever move. Zero.
Every time stadiums come
especially
up.
Especially now, considering the billion dollars.
Now is
especially
exactly
now,
why.
Considering the billion-dollar business the NFL is, and you lose an NFL football team?
Yes.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself.
Because it's the ultimate benefit versus the investment into the stadium, right? As the city, you're investing all these things, or a county, you're investing all these things into the stadium. The expectation is that you get benefits back from that, and that's how stadiums are sold to the public, is the idea that the money that goes in from
right,
the city and
right.
from the government will ultimately benefit
which
the city
which never
than that.
Which most of the time never happens.
Well, that's the problem.
But again, the NFL's got you by the you-know-what, because we're the NFL, and we have the best product in the world, and you want it, and you need it.
But that doesn't mean you're obligated to do these things without commitments from the ownership of the teams themselves. It's not a crime if a local government decides, hey, we're not going to allow
you to
pay for
your stadium.
You
know who would be a crime to?
Who?
The people of Philadelphia who when Lincoln Financial Field is obsolete in 20 years and they say the Eagles left to move to San Antonio?
Yeah.
Again, we're going around in circles, but there's no way. A local politician in Philadelphia would stake their claim to fight the National Football League. You are out of your mind.
If it doesn't work for the city and your job's to run the city, then yeah, I can totally see it. It's not popular, and it might cost you your job, but there's enough people
no,
that
it
I
might
think
cost
would
you
do it.
Your life. No, it might cost you your life.
Okay, well, what about the accountability of the owner in that case? Because it's not like all negotiations, like the owners are always fully going the full mile that they have to do. It's not like they're always holding up their end of the bargain.
Their accountability is to do what's best for their organization that they own.
Okay, and the city's the same thing.
But you're gonna be the one who's an idiot because you let an NFL football team walk away.
Okay, but you run a stable, functional city for all these people.
Okay.
You fund your programs.
Okay. You don't think
those
there
are the trade-offs.
Okay. You don't think there are local politicians in San Diego on the phone every day with the NFL trying to get a team back?
They probably are,
okay.
But you want it
Case
at
closed.
The right cost. It's cost matters.
Case closed.
Value matters.
If you're the politician who brings NFL football back to San Diego and people are going to laud you, you don't care what the cost is. You don't.
Okay. Well, 855-212-4227. That's how you join the show. If you want to get in and talk about it, 855-212-4227. I'm Vince Quinn. That's James Graceffo. And you can join the show at It's Vince Quinn. That's all one word, at It's Vince Quinn. Now, coming up next, because I wanted to get to this here, but... what's going on in Houston with James Harden is sad. And let's talk about that next. Keep it right here.
You're listening to The Vince Quinn Show on CBS Sports Radio. Listening to the Vince Quinn Show on CBS Sports Radio.
So I want to get to unretiring in just a moment, but I did first ask the question with James Harden getting his number retired in Houston already. I just want to know how people in the area feel about it. I know we're on down there, so we've got Cam in Dallas. And Cam, how do you feel about James Harden getting retired?
I mean, I think it's a joke. Kendrick Perkins was on a podcast and he was talking about how when they were in the finals in Miami, how he was just in the strip clubs the whole time, and like James Harden actually has his number retired already in Houston, in the strip clubs.
I saw that.
The strip clubs in Houston has a 13 James Harden jersey retired already, so he probably doesn't even care if his jersey's retired in Houston. Like he's already. He's already retired where he wants to be retired. I mean,
yeah. No, it's that's funny, man. Thanks. Like, that's so crazy. Strip clubs actually retired his number. That's incredible. I mean, how much do you have to burn for that to happen? That's the thing. Like, how much cash, how many nights? Because plenty of athletes go out to the clubs, right? Like, let's not dance around the issue here. It happens all the time. And that's fine if they want to do it.
Women.
Yeah, I mean, hey.
Big-breasted women.
It's appealing. It's appealing. That's what I've seen historically. Just an observation. So when you're James Harden and you go to a place like that, yeah, I mean, how much are you burning to get the jersey retired? But for the Rockets to do it is a different thing, right? But a strip club to retire a number, fine. It's good business for them. He walks in, he goes, yeah, my jersey's on the wall. I basically live here. It gets him to keep stopping in more. Smart. Retire. Long story short, if you own a strip club, retire every athlete's number that walks in the door. That's the best business you can do. But how do you as a team do that already? How do you do that? Let's go to Scott in Toronto. Scott, how do you feel about James Harden getting his number retired already?
Hey, how are you, Vince, man?
I'm confused. I'm very confused.
No, I am confused as well. The last caller, that was a hilarious comment, retired jersey in a strip club. That's hilarious. But, yeah, I think it's ridiculous to the point of being offensive. Like, I don't understand it. Like, he totally trashed the franchise. And, like, me being from Toronto, Kyle Lowry, not only are we going to retire his jersey, he's going to end up with a statue outside of Scotiabank Arena one day, but we will never do it until he's retired, until he's done. Yeah, it doesn't make sense, man.
Yeah, it's a very strange thing. And, Scott, thanks for the call. Yeah, because for James Harden, I mean, obviously there's all the other stuff that I laid out before. I mean, the guy put on a lot of weight. He was partying. He showed up late to camp. Like, it was everything was disrespectful about it. If it was, hey, they had a little bit of a disagreement on some things, but it was pretty civil, and they worked out a deal, and everybody left on good terms. No, he left in a balloon suit, and then he lost 30 pounds in, like, 4 days and looked like a totally different human being, okay? It was blatant what he was doing. The way he did it was shameless. And for him to go about it like that, and the Rockets to immediately turn around and go, Your Majesty, we honor you. Like, what are we doing here? It's just such an embarrassment for the franchise. I mean, it's a joke. But they decide to retire the number. I'm floored by that. I don't know if I'll ever get over that. Okay, I'll get over it. I'll get over it eventually, but not tonight. So anyway, if you want to get in and talk about it, 855-212-4227. That's how you join the show. 855-212-4227. By the way, March is finally here on CBS. We've got two triple headers over the weekend. Key games that will shape the tournament bubble, conference rivalries, and a conference tournament championship game. The action tips off at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific today as the road to the Final Four continues on CBS. So let's go now to unretirement. As we've talked about retiring numbers, because here's a scenario that popped up with Russell Wilson that was fascinating, right? It's been floated around, you know, Seattle's picking up the phone now. Those are the reports. They're taking calls about trading Russell Wilson, which at this point makes all the sense in the world. It's a philosophical difference. They cannot bridge this gap. Wilson has value. They've chosen the coach over the quarterback. That's the choice they want to make. That's fine. It's you can't kill them. Like, I would go with Russell Wilson over Pete Carroll, but I can't go ballistic on the Seahawks' choice to go with Pete Carroll over Russell Wilson. I think it's not an easy choice, and it's fair. But given that you're at this stage where you're choosing with Carroll over Wilson, now you've got to move the guy. He's incredibly valuable. Find out what you can get. Well, one of the places that's interested and that Russell Wilson is also interested in, the Chicago Bears. Now, it's a little tangential, right? But essentially, Russell Wilson right now wears number 3. So you think about the modern day athlete and branding that goes into that, right? A lot of these guys have their own clothing. So their own clothing lines, they're selling stuff in an online store, their own website. And so the number is a big part of the identity. Allen Iverson, for example, you might not be a Philly person whatsoever. You might have never cared about the Sixers in your life. If I tell you Allen Iverson, that 3 on those shoes is a big part of his brand. that three is still connected to him. He hasn't played in the NBA for like a decade, but you still think about that three, Michael Jordan 23, right? Like that number matters. So if Russell Wilson was going to Chicago, there's a chance that he would want to keep the number. The number is retired. Who's number three on the Bears? And I'll just ask you, let's little trivia. Do, 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 do. Who's number three on the Chicago Bears? Time's up. Bronco Nagurski, which is one of the greatest football names of all time. Bronco Nagurski is a wonderful name, and I wish I was cool enough to have that kind of name. Vince Quinn is fine. It rolls off the tongue, and it's a good broadcastery thing. But being named Bronco Nagurski and playing football is about as cool as it gets. So Bronco Nagurski, and I will not say Nagurski, and I will not just say Bronco. I will only say Bronco Nagurski. Well, he hasn't played football since 1943, okay? That was his last game. That's not when he got drafted. That's not the last time he won a championship. That's the last time he played the sport. He'd been out of the league for about 5 or 6 years before that. He came back for a couple of games in 1943, and his number three is now retired with the Chicago Bears. It's been retired for a very long time. So the question is, if Russell Wilson wants number three, do you unretire the number? And just in general, with any athlete, as you think about some of the teams, and maybe you're a fan of one of these teams right now. For example, I'm doing the show in New York. I'm surrounded by Yankees fans. Frankly, I could care less about the Yankees, all right? I'm not here to be like, rah, rah, Yankees, but I've been to the stadium, and half of the stadium is just the numbers of people they've retired. The wall, I mean, there's a literal wall. You go around one of the curves of the stadium, and it's one number after the other. That's a long hallway with a lot of numbers retired. You're not going triple digits. So unless we start putting 100s on the uniforms, unless we start going into fractions or decimals, then you got basic numbers here, right? So you can only give out so many. For some of these leagues, some of these sports, you're restricted on what numbers can go to a certain position, right? In the NFL, you're restricted to all that stuff. You're limited. So you've got a very finite amount of numbers that you can give out. Is there ever a point where it's all right, where it's okay to unretire a number, to get something that's been taken away forever? No player, regardless of how good they are, will ever wear this number again. We will forever honor the legacy of a Bronco Nagurski. Is there ever a time where you say, well, until now? Can you ever take that back? Is it fair to take that back? Can there be a circumstance? Because for me, absolutely. You can absolutely unretire a number. And why is that? How is that, right? Well, part of it is time. Time does matter here. Because the last time he played football was 1943! It's basically 80 years ago, okay? How many people actually saw Bronco Nagurski play football and were old enough to really remember it? A handful, right? And I'm not trying to be disrespectful to those people, but it's about you've honored the legacy of the man by retiring the number for the whole generation and generations of people that saw him play. Right? For those people, for their kids, like you've honored the guy for a very long time. Again, we're almost at the point where it's 80 years. 80! That's a long time. That's a great, tremendous honor. 80 years of football, or however many years of it being retired, where nobody else has worn his number. So would it be dishonorable, especially if his family's on board, right? His legacy, grandchildren, whatever it might be, great-grandchildren. Again, it's been 80 years. If those people are okay with it, isn't that all right? Is that wrong? Can you ever unretire a number? Maybe not. Maybe 80 years. It doesn't matter. Vince, if you retire a number, it's a retired number. That's it. It doesn't change. To me, it does. 855-212-4227. That's how you get in. Happy to talk with you about it. I think retirement of numbers is really interesting. You know, and there's so many other ways to look at this, too. But 855-212-4227 is how you join the show. You can also hit me up on Twitter at It's Vince Quinn, and that's all one word, at It's Vince Quinn. So I look at this, and again, age does matter, right? Age, it just the amount of time that spans between when the person played, who was around to see that person, and what it means. Because if nobody's, you know, for the most part, nobody was really around for it, you know, but it doesn't have quite the same impact. You can still have a retired player, and I don't want to keep bringing up Bronco Nagurski because it's not exactly just about him. That was a hypothetical with Russell Wilson. But looking at guys that have been retired, if it's been 100 years and your name is still in the Ring of Honor and your plaque is still on a wall and you're still in the Hall of Fame, like if they're doing everything that still recognizes you and what you did, is it really a disrespect 100 years later to let somebody else wear that number? If anything, you get another moment of resurgence, right? Like, this is a chance to talk about that person again. This is a chance to analyze their career and highlight, wow, we're going to unretire number three. Remember, or if you never saw, because in these cases, it's been a long time. If you never saw Bronco Nagurski, like, let's break that down. Let's go through some of the highlights. Let's talk about his life and his legacy and why he got retired and what he meant to the Chicago Bears and exactly why it's such a big deal that this next person is getting the opportunity to wear that number. It's a great way to honor somebody. Right? It makes a lot of sense to me. And then you also consider the thing that when you're looking at all of these retirements of numbers, you do have those limitations. You got to allow other people to wear the uniform. But the spinoff of it that I really like, and some teams do this. This is a big college thing. But I really enjoy it. The idea of numbers being legacy, right? The legacy number is exceptional. And maybe you've got that. Maybe at a college that you rooted for, a college that you went to, Dallas Cowboy fans. And that's somebody had mentioned that to me on Twitter. It was a great point. The Dallas Cowboys, when it comes to the legacy there, do they have numbers retired? Yeah, sure. I would assume they have retired people. You can't wear that number. But number 88 means something in Dallas, right? If a guy's got 88, that tells you something. That's a big deal. It's Drew Pearson, Hall of Fame wide receiver. It's Michael Irvin, Hall of Fame wide receiver. It's Dez Bryant, high first round pick. Really good career with the Dallas Cowboys. Now, and Jerry Jones campaigned for this. When they drafted CeeDee Lamb, he didn't want 88. He had some other number. Maybe the number he wore in college, something he wore in high school, a number to signify where he got drafted, whatever it is. He had some other number in his head of what he wanted to be. And Jerry Jones convinced him to wear number 88. Because that shows how he and the organization, all the coaches, all the scouts, the people that went into that decision to draft CeeDee Lamb, they believe that he's that kind of player. He's that special. And when you wear 88, I would imagine people in Dallas, as they evaluate his career, which for now, as a rookie, good. He had a good rookie year. Over the course of his career, that's going to be the level of expectation that he has now. Does he stack up to those guys? Does he deserve the number 88? Should he be stripped of the 88? Did he disgrace 88, right? Like, that's a fascinating way to look at it. And it gives so much weight. It excites people whenever that gets thrown out because you go, wow, they really, I thought he was good, but they really love this guy. They gave him 88. For college teams, it's usually like, oh, number 9 is the team captain, right? This is the most representative player that we have. It's not just a patch. It's a number. It's a legacy of all these different people, great players, pro players, Heisman winners, Hall of Famers, whatever it is, all these exceptional people that have come through our doors, and they've all worn this number. And that tells you something about the player by virtue of wearing it. Like, that's really cool. I love that. That's such a nice touch. It's a little thing, right? In the grand scheme, we don't talk about it all that often, but it's a little thing that's really cool and means a lot to everybody that knows what the deal is. And so when you have those kinds of situations, I'm all for it. I think that's the way to go. Generally, retiring numbers, I don't know why you need to do it. I don't know what the point is. Yeah, I mean, you could put somebody in the Hall of Fame. If you want to keep the number on the shelf for a little while silently, sure. But at some point, you let the number back out. You let people enjoy it. So 855-212-4227. That's how you join the show, 855-212-4227. I'm Vince Quinn. You can always hop in on Twitter, Instagram, at It's Vince Quinn. And when we come back, let's get into the J.J. Watt signing. That was weird.
You're listening to the Vince Quinn Show on CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio. Listening to the Vince Quinn Show, weekend overnights on CBS Sports Radio.
It's a morning show. We need to fix that. Maybe that's one of the few things on the checklist is we need to get returns that say, it's a morning show. Now, you can't hear the asterisk. The asterisk is silent, but we are a morning show, so we'll work on that. We'll figure it out. Now,
I'll dare you to run that up the flagpole.
Yeah, you know what? I should. Actually, because now you say it, I really feel like it could get rejected. Which makes it even funnier.
They will say, we're not doing that.
I think it would be hysterical if they rejected it, if I put it in for
they're
a morning show
like
and they said
have,
no.
Like you have five heads and they're going to ask you, do you know what a day part is?
Yeah, and I'll say, well, if you want to tell me the time of day, sir, is it on after midnight? Well, yes. Is after midnight the morning? Well, technically. Technically.
Again, you're using logic.
Yes.
It's frowned upon.
That's what the show is. This is a logic show, Graceff. We are all logic.
Oh, yeah, all the time.
This is all logic and heart. It is not hot takery, if you will.
Yeah. Sure.
Yes. It's not.
We're going places with that slogan.
Am I a hot takes guy?
No.
Yeah.
Not particularly.
No.
Well, that's why we're not making Skip Bayless money.
Well, that's why we're not making Skip Bayless money.
I'd rather be a hot take guy and make Skip Bayless money.
That's the thing. You have thoughts once in a while, and you go, yeah, if I was more viral on Twitter and I was a hot take guy, then, like, yeah, I get why. I'll say this. I get why people do it. I get why people do it. I can't. I just can't do it. It bothers me to do it.
Hey, you can't do it till you tried.
I didn't exactly try. I'll say this. Like, being in radio now and doing shows for, like, almost seven years now, especially early on, you try things because you're figuring out how all of this works. You're figuring out how to host, how to talk. Like, I don't know. There's just a lot that goes into figuring all this stuff out. And I tried things that might have been a little controversial and, like, things that, you know, pushed the boundary a little bit when I was younger with all of it. It just didn't feel right.
This guy's a liar.
Well, yeah, that's how I felt. So,
this guy's a choke artist.
Well, don't give me the ball at the end of a basketball game, okay? I set picks. I get rebounds. That's all I do, okay? I know my role now. I've accepted it. I was a choker. I'm a role player. But, yeah, I couldn't do the hot take stuff either. You get paid. So, hey, I mean, get paid, I guess, if you want. It's your choice. I'm in the overnight. But it's a morning show.
I got a for sale sign on my back. So anybody looking, I'm here for you.
There you go. Graceffo is for sale. If you would like to buy Graceffo and take him home, 855-212-4227.
He's also single. I'll give you all the hot takes I don't believe anytime you want.
There you go.
You're a loser.
So a couple of things here. One, I want to get into J.J. Watt, who signed with the Cardinals this week. And it was like, wait, what? He signed with who? Because he looks at it, and he sends out a tweet once he's a free agent. He's like, wow, this free agency thing is really great. Hey, it's nice to be wanted, you know? It's just like, and you got to figure everybody in the world was reaching out to J.J. Watt. He's an incredibly well-respected guy. And for the career that he's had, the kind of player that he is, and what he still gives you when he's healthy, that's a valuable piece. We're talking about a defensive end, top pass rushing defensive end, a guy that at the beginning of his career we were talking about on track to be maybe the best defensive player ever. Now, the injuries have happened, and we'll see where Aaron Donald goes by the time it's all said and done and whatever. But looking at J.J. Watt at this stage, he could go anywhere he wanted to. He chose the Arizona Cardinals. Now, how good are the Cardinals? They're pretty good. They're pretty good. Like, if you have them on the schedule, you look at it and you go, oh, well, Cardinals, it's a tough one. Right? That's an appropriate level of quality football. They're a 9-7 kind of team. They can make the playoffs. They could beat a team in the playoffs. You don't expect them to win the Super Bowl. That's who they are. And for him to sign there was a bit surprising because he talked a lot in Houston about the commitment to winning and how disappointed he was with all those guys. At the end of the season, he was ripping everybody. Now he's got a chance to go wherever he wants. You see the Tom Brady revolution, which is, okay, he signs for cheap. Not that it's a revolution exclusively to Brady, but he renews the conversation. He goes for cheap. He goes to Tampa. They have all these players. They add other players because of the rate. Now they go and win a Super Bowl. You look at J.J. Watt and you go, okay, well, is he going to take some kind of significant discount or at least a little bit of a discount to go somewhere that has a legitimate chance to go over the top right now? Like, he is one of those pieces. They add somebody in free agency. They get a draft pick or two right. And here you go. This team is going on their way to win the Super Bowl. We talked about Green Bay playing in Wisconsin. Green Bay's a really great team. They could use work on the defensive line. Adding a guy in like J.J. Watt would be a great fit for them. He's in Arizona. Little surprising. In a way, disappointing. I mean, here's the thing. It is a business, and we've hashed this out a lot talking about the Chargers tonight and moving the team and all that different stuff. I get that sports are a business, and when you're talking about other people's money, it's one of those things that who are you to say when you're not in the situation? So I generally get all of that and understand all of that. But, man, I'll say this. It'd be nice to see more people willing to take a pay cut to go and win the whole damn thing. Guys that have never done it, guys late in their career. You see it in the NBA. The way you see it in the NBA is you get guys that are vet minimum deals, and it's like, I'm Kyle Korver. I'm 36, and I haven't won anything. Let me go and sign on with the Cavaliers and be on the back of the bench for nothing and go win with them. And the like, well, what were you saying, Graceffo, there? Blake Griffin. Yeah, he just signed with my brain is hurt.
He hasn't signed yet.
Oh, he just got...
I don't think he signed
okay.
yet. Okay. They just bought him out. So Blake Griffin's a classic example of someone who's never won anything and is going to end up on a championship contender just because they decided to come to a mutual parting of the ways in Detroit.
Yeah. Go... There's nothing wrong with chasing a ring. You know? So, looking at that, for the NBA, it happens all the time. They ring chase. In the NFL, you don't really see ring chasing. You don't see it from guys, right? I'm trying to think. Like, I mean, really, Graceffo, just running between the two of us here. Like, can you? Who's the last guy you can think of outside of Brady that is like take less money and ring chase?
Every guy on the Bucks this year.
Leonard Fournette. Right. Well, Antonio Brown had nowhere else
LeSean
to go.
LeSean McCoy
was ring chasing.
Terrell Suggs tried to do it 1 year with the Chiefs, I believe.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. That's a good one. So, yeah, I feel like you get it at some spots. Running back makes a lot of sense. If you can get on a contender as a running back, I mean, if you're over 30 and you can get on a team as a running back in general, you do it.
But I mean, the Bucks had guys coming out of the woodwork to want to go play there this year. Come on.
Yeah.
Like, even Pat McAfee talks about it all the time of like, if I could have gotten some paperwork worked out, I would have been in Bucks camp.
Makes sense. It makes sense. But not as many guys as you think you would see do it for the amount of talk that you get. Because that's the thing, right? There's so much sports conversation, which is, man, I just want a ring more than anything. I'll end my career if I get a ring. That's the only thing. I don't care about MVPs. I don't care about Offensive Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, Heisman's, whatever. Like, I don't Hall of Fame. I don't care about any of that stuff. I just want to win a title.
Well, again, you got to look at it from J.J. Watt's perspective. J.J. Watt just got released, right? Or he just negotiated to get his release. Because I mean, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah.
Right. So he looks at it as young quarterback, not making a lot of money. My buddy Hopkins is there. And you know Hopkins recruited J.J. Watt to go there. Like, let's be honest. Like,
oh,
you know that,
yes.
You know that definitely played a role in this. So he looks at it as young guy in a rookie contract. They have the ability to maybe move some stuff around, get somebody there. But... For anyone who thinks J.J. Watt took less money, to go to the Cardinals. They're losing their minds.
Well, yeah, like, and that's the thing. It's high dollar value. He's getting like $16 million a year, right? It's something like that. He's getting a good bit of money per year.
Yeah, and it's a lot. It's a big chunk of guaranteed money as well.
Yes. I think it's in the 20s, the guarantee.
Yeah, 20s.
So he's getting the guaranteed money, and the Cardinals are good enough that you can squint and make the argument that they win the Super Bowl.
They're a contender, but they're not a contender on the level. Yeah, they're not a contender on the level of the Bills or a contender on the level of the Chiefs or the Packers or any other of the teams that he was rumored to go.
Yeah.
So for J.J. Watt, honestly, if they put him in a situation where they can keep him healthy and he's on the field for, I don't know, how many snaps a game you want to put it at? What's the number you want to put it at?
Ooh, 40, if you can get him
30-something?
I was thinking in the 30s as well. Right. Something like 35,
like high
40.
High 30s.
Yeah.
They keep him right. They keep him healthy. And if J.J. Watt can go out there and get 10 sacks, we're going to call it a good year for J.J. Watt. Like, let's be honest. That's what we're going to call it. He gave you the lip service of, I want to win. His actions said a different thing. Like, let's be honest.
Yeah, he found a good medium of the money's great and the team's not awful. So
he got a team that was in the just right area. They're not too bad. They're not great. They're just right.
Yeah.
Like, if everything breaks right, we can win something. But again, they're in a really tough division. Like let's call it like we see it. This is one of the toughest divisions in football.
The Rams just got better, right? So they added Stafford. That matters. You're going to look at, we'll see what happens with Seattle.
Well, again, they're tough to call. You know, really don't know at this point.
No, San Francisco keeps flirting with the idea of getting rid of
Jimmy
Garoppolo.
If they come back healthy, their quarterback situation is up in the air as well. But if they come back healthy, you know, their defense alone is going to keep them in ball games if they come back healthy.
Oh, no doubt. And so that's the thing. Yeah, it is a tough division. The conference has been pretty good the past couple of years. So it's not a cakewalk. It's not the best option to win. And that's how it is, right? Like that, I think a lot of free agents would kill for the J.J. Watt scenario, though, too. As much as you want to see these guys as a fan, when you hear so much and talk so much about championships, you want to see guys take less and go for it somewhere, like they ring chase in the NBA, like they did with the Bucks or the Broncos before with Peyton, where like Wes Welker showed up and DeMarcus Ware showed up and like they just built this juggernaut team. When you see that happen, that's what you want as a fan. Take less, go win. But then as a player, you want exactly what he got. You want a team that's good enough to win, but also pays you exactly the top dollar amount that you think you're worth. He nailed it. Like, as a player, that's the dream.
He did. He did. But did you ever think when J.J. Watt got on the open market that he was going to get the deal he got? Like, I never thought that he was going to get 20-something million dollars guaranteed in, like, $16 million a year.
Yeah.
Like, I never thought he was going to get it.
I know it's a premium position, and he's got the track record, but he also has the injuries to go with that track record.
For the last 5 years hasn't been great. Like, let's call it like we see it. Like,
yeah, he's clearly not the same guy.
He's had one good season in the last 5 years where he's been able to stay on the field. And if he's able to stay on the field and he's still the player, he's not still the player he was. He's never going to be all-pro defensive player of the year J.J. Watt ever again.
No.
Like, that's up the bottom line. But if he can come in and be a situational pass rusher, play his 30 to 40 snaps a game, get his 10 sacks, the Cardinals will call it a good signing.
And sell so jerseys, by the way.
Right. And we'll call it good. We'll call it a good signing as well.
Yeah. No, it will
because when it comes down to it, J.J. Watt's not going to make the difference of whether or not this team is a playoff team or not. Honestly.
No. No, they have other factors. Really, it's Kingsbury and figuring out the offense and how much more they can grow on that side of the ball. That's the bigger issue for them. But here's the other thing, too, by the way, which is interesting. We were talking about Russell Wilson before. What happened was I was reading Pro Football Talk before. I read that all the time. Whatever, they get the credit. But that whole idea of Bronco Nagurski and unretiring his number, they had floated that out for Russell Wilson. And J.J. Watt actually is wearing number 99. I said that weird. He's wearing number 99. There you go. In Arizona. And that was a retired number for a Hall of Famer. Now, I have no idea who this guy is, and that's the thing. His name is Marshall Goldberg, 4-time All-Pro, halfback, and defensive back, which you love. You love that. You love a guy that plays both sides of the ball. But the last time he played was 1948. It's 1948. So, yeah, the guy was a franchise great, and they recognized him for a long time, and they retired his number, and it's been retired for decades upon decades. But the Cardinals said, hey, we've got J.J. Watt now. The number matters a lot to him, and we want to keep that number with him. Are you okay if we unretire 99? And they reached out to the family, who said, yes, that's okay, and here you go. J.J. Watt is going to wear number 99. They've unretired a number. So I don't generally think retiring numbers is the way to go. You honor the person. I think Ring of Honor is the biggest thing, right? Have the name up in the stadium. Have it hanging around somewhere, a plaque on a wall celebrating all your franchise greats. Like, celebrate the person that way, but allow the number eventually. If you want to hold on to it, like, there's the Eagles, for example, do, like, silent retirements where they won't give somebody the number of a franchise great for, like, you know, 15 years or something if it's appropriate. Even if it's not somebody that even makes the Ring of Honor, it's somebody that, they're like, they're pretty good. You might wait 5 years before you give that number out again. Just give it a little space. Give a little respect for the guy and what they did, and then eventually you let somebody else back in. So I like that they unretired the number. You should. At some point, it's totally okay to unretire numbers. I'm good with it. So 855-212-4227. That's how you join the show, 855-212-4227. And coming up next, the All-Star Game format coming up later today is totally different, and it's the best version of the All-Star Game. We're going to talk about that next. Keep it right here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to The Vince Quinn Show on CBS Sports Radio.
CBS Sports Radio.
Listening to The Vince Quinn Show, weekend overnights on CBS Sports Radio.
Some things should be simple, some things should be easy. When it comes to NFL overtime, it is neither of those, and it's only getting more complicated. We will certainly talk about that. I'm Vince Quinn with you, coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. So, every year, you get rule proposals from the NFL. Some of them are great. Some of them are really great. Some of them are fun. Some of them are exciting. Usually, those get rejected, but they exist. They happen. For example, fun rule proposed for the second time now in a row by the Philadelphia Eagles. Changing the onside kick. The onside kick, as it stands now, is a terrible play. It's terrible. It's awful. It's miserable. Does anybody enjoy the onside kick? Is that exciting television? You're getting a kicker that lines up. He's like, all right, if I get this ball like a watermelon and I kick it at this funky angle, maybe I can bounce it right so that it goes 6 yards and falls short and it's still not a converted kick. Like, the likelihood of the play converting is so low. Nobody enjoys kicking in any real capacity. It's just, it's an awful play. What's the likelihood of converting an onside kick? I mean, seriously, what, like 4%? It can't be any good. So it's a bad play. It's a useless play. Doesn't do anything for anybody. So change the onside kick. Make it more exciting. Rule change that's proposed is, go to the 25. It's, I believe, 4th and 15. You convert it or you don't. Okay. Offense is on the field. It's an offensive league. You're promoting your stars. It's a clutch moment. Game on the line. Put those guys out there. Graceffo hates this idea. Graceffo, you shake your head. You go, no, 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 no. Why is that? Why don't you like the onside kick rule? What's wrong with that?
Because the onside kick is supposed to be hard.
Isn't 4th and 15 hard?
It's easier than getting an onside kick.
Well, yes, but it's also actually possible to happen.
It's not supposed to be easy to get the ball back when you've played the whole game and you're the team with the lead at the end of the game with 90 seconds left, let's say.
Yeah.
And the other team has no timeouts. It's not supposed to be easy to get the ball back to tie the game.
It's not supposed to be easy, but it's also not supposed to be complete. Or it's more exciting. It's a better product not impossible.
Vince, if you've played the game for 58 and a half minutes.
Yes.
And you've dominated the game, and the other team gets to within a score, you want the play to get the ball back to be easy?
It's 4th and 15. That's not easy.
But it's easier than getting an onside kick is the
point. Well, yes, but an onside kick is what? I mean, seriously, what do you think an onside kick conversion percentage is?
Oh, it's very low, obviously.
Okay, but
it's supposed to. But it's supposed to be.
Like 4%?
It's supposed to be.
Okay, but the 4th and 15, what are the odds of converting that, though?
It's like a lot higher than,
okay,
again, we're going to go around in circles.
But 12% is something that's like watchable.
I would guarantee it's higher than 12. Getting a 4th and 15 is higher than 12%.
Okay.
We're going to go around in circles. It should not be easy to get the ball back at the end of the game. And
no.
We're making it easier.
It should be a little bit easier, yeah.
No, it should not be a little bit easier at all. It should not be a little bit easier at all. The game should go to the team that dominated the game and won the game for 60 minutes.
But then why have the onside kick at all?
Because it gives you a way to come back.
Not if it's at 4% to convert.
Then you know what? Let's go back to the Neanderthal days of football when you can kick the ball 10 yards and you can wipe out somebody in front of you and get the ball. Or you want to do that?
Yeah, I need people dying on the field. That's
well,
what
let's
I'm
do
for.
That.
Yeah.
So you want to make the onside kick a higher probability?
Leather helmets?
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's kick the ball 10 yards, have somebody get run over, and then you get the ball. Let's go back to it.
Yeah, sure.
Have everybody sign a waiver.
I'm getting rid of the forward pass.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of it. No, but I want some level of it adds a different element to it, and it's a more exciting. Okay, how about this? If it was 4th and 20,
that's better.
Okay,
you know what it really should be? You know what it really should be? It should be 4th and 20 from your own 5. That's what it really should be.
That makes a lot of sense.
You have to go 95 yards to win the game, and
you have to go immediately get the fourth and twenty.
Not what?
Because I like that because the conversion then, because all these drives start on the 25 now. They promote the touchback
right.
that when you're starting
the,
on the 25.
You have to drive 95 yards, and you immediately start with a 4th and 20. And again, all this is gimmicky anyway. It's garbage. It's not what the idea of the sport really is. But at least it's harder than 4th and 15 from your 25.
Yeah, no, that's better. But at the very least, it's a step forward. I would rather see them get rid of the onside kick as it is now, run a play, let the offenses figure it out, and then if they go, okay, this is progress, this is more exciting, this is more interesting, this is giving us better games, this can get a team that's buried, and in the fourth quarter, they can go on a crazy run. That's something that keeps people tuned in. You know,
end of the day, the team that's buried doesn't deserve to win the football game.
To some degree, they don't.
They don't.
And that's why the likelihood is low, and that's why it could lead to blowouts as well, right? Because you don't convert, the other team takes it 20 yards, and they're constantly adding points, and it just ends the game. So more likely than not, that would be the case. And that's finding the balance. That's the thing you work towards. But switch away from the kick, and then see what it looks like. You run 4th and 15 for a year. And that's the problem with the NFL. They've got such a big product and so many people on it that when people don't like a rule change, it feels like the whole world is caving in on you because it feels like everybody you know is talking about it all the time. But is it the right thing to do? Getting away from the onside kick as it is right now? Absolutely. Absolutely. Change it up. Find something else to do with that play. And they're talking about it now. You've seen the XFL, fan-controlled football is doing it now. They've all got versions of the onside kick. Fan-controlled football actually changed their version of it, but that's a story for another day. So looking at the whole thing, I would love to see them change that rule. They don't want to do it because they've got all the status. They've got the popularity. They want to make adjustments, but they don't want to make any major changes. And so they're nervous about moving the onside kick into something else entirely. That's where it's at. And that brings us to overtime. Because the overtime rules, first off, I'm still trying to figure out the rule the Ravens proposed, which is totally out there. It was like spot and place, I think is what they called it. That was the idea, which is, hey, let's get the ball. I'm going to try to explain this as best I can, okay? The basics of it were, it's overtime. One team, instead of a coin toss and all the things that go into that, it would be, one team goes, all right, we're going to decide that the drive is going to start at the 14-yard line. Now, when you do that, the other team has the choice to pick offense or defense. Oh, well, it's too close to our end zone. Well, it's a long drive to go. We're going to play defense first. Or, hey, they placed it at the 30. We're going to go for offense. It sounds dumb. It sounds confusing. That's why I hate it. And I don't think it's going to work in the NFL. I don't see that getting worked out. But here's the thing. As much as talking about the rule and how silly it is, the idea that overtime needs to change is something we can all agree on, including the NFL itself, right? Because we have the conversations about this thing every single year. Every year. This is a major part of the sport, right? I mean, you only have so many games. Now it's going from 16 to 17, but you've only got 17, right? The margin of error and the significance of a win are massive. They're gigantic. And so you got to figure it out. You can't have ties, right? I think we can all agree on that. Ties for the NFL are silly. So, number one, come up with something that by default doesn't give you a tie. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm crazy. This might be a me problem. Vince, you want to solve ties with something that doesn't end in a tie? You're crazy. Maybe. That's fine. I'll be the crazy guy. But I would love to have a format that doesn't have the potential, the possibility of a tie. Now they're talking about adding or returning, rather, to sudden death overtime, which was, okay, you win the coin toss, you go down the field, you got the ball first, you kick a field goal at the end of the game, bam, there you go. Just because you won a coin toss and you kicked a 50-yard field goal, the other team never gets the ball in overtime, and that's what we're talking about right now. That's one of the rules, because the whole idea is, well, it's another way to prevent a tie, right? It makes it easier to not have a tie. But also, the system still allows a tie. It still allows a tie. So don't have it. Don't have it. Come up with anything else that eliminates all possible ties from existing. Because nobody wants ties in the sport. They're not fun. They're not exciting. They cause all sorts of headaches. Get rid of the ties, right? So what do you do? I mean, college overtime is one option, obviously, because it doesn't end in a tie. It gives you a final answer. One team wins and one team doesn't. Do you want to change the yardage? Maybe. You start at the 40 instead of the 25, fine. You can talk about those things. You can figure that out. But start somewhere. Start with the college overtime and go from there. Tweak it. Like in Graceffo, you don't like that either. Do you like ties? Do you like ties in the NFL?
No, but okay. but again, you can't be out there playing all night. This is not a sport where you can be out there playing all night. This isn't baseball. You can't do it.
Well, that's fine. So that's your main gripe then, is that they could go for 8 rounds of college overtime, and what's the point?
No, my point is NFL players do not want to be out there longer on the field than they have to be, naturally, right?
Yeah.
Because they have to do all this again a week later, and it's not easy.
Yes.
Right. So the NFL will never adopt college overtime anyway because they view it as gimmicky and beneath them, which it is.
Is it though? That's close to the...
No, it is. I think if you asked NFL rule makers and you asked the competition committee, "Hey, would you ever go to college overtime?" They would say no because they would think it's gimmicky and beneath them. Because in reality it really is. Like you're starting at the 25 and then you go for 2 or you don't go for 2 or you can't go for 2. It's just gimmicky. Here's what they should do. Just play a normal quarter. Play a normal quarter. 15 minutes.
Okay.
Whoever wins, whoever loses at the end of the quarter, none of this, somebody didn't get a possession, you didn't get a possession, you won the coin toss, so you went down the field and kicked a field goal, won the game. None of that. Just play a normal quarter. Now, this will never happen either. Because, again, NFL players do not want to be out there longer than they have to because they realize in some cases they have to do this a week later or even 3 days later. So there's no right way to solve the problem.
But like we have to just say wrong ways though. There are factual wrong ways, and when you allow for avenues that give you a tie, that is a wrong way to do it.
But Vince, You can, I just explained to you why the tie is never going to go away. I just explained it to you.
Because they think it's too gimmicky?
No, you can't be out here all night playing a football game.
Okay, so then so then here's the other proposal, right? And this is what I say every single year, and I will die
NFL
on this hill.
NFL players will die on a hill. To not play, like, if you gave an NFL player the option of playing double and triple overtime, they'd want to, like, run. They'd run away from you. They'd run away from the bargaining table.
And that's fine. And that's why you do a two-point conversion shootout.
Again, you want to be the NHL? Like what do
yes,
you want to...
I want to break the tie.
It's
I
gimmick.
Wanna,
it's gimmick.
Okay, but you're breaking the tie as quickly as possible.
It's a gimmick.
But it breaks the
it's
tie.
It's stupid.
It's actual offenses
it's
on the field.
Stupid.
It's equal opportunity.
Just play...
Ending in a tie is stupid.
I agree with you.
So you got to eliminate it.
But
it's gimmicky, but it,
at the
it ends
end,
the tie.
But I just told you why they'll always keep the tie. Because they don't want to reduce themselves to a gimmick, which they should not do. Which is college overtime and your two-point shootout or whatever you say it is. Do you really want to be the NHL at the end of the day and you say, man, we've played 60 minutes of the game that we all 65 minutes of the game that we've all designed and have it come down to a penalty kicks or, you know, somebody's best move from center ice. That's what it's. Nobody wants to see that.
Yes,
nobody,
you do.
No.
Yes, you
no,
do.
No, you want to see the game end in its most usual form, which would be playing a full quarter to its end. And if it ends in a tie, that's it.
Then you do a two-point shootout.
No.
You got in the tie.
No.
Yes.
Ties are not going anywhere. I keep.
Well, then that's a problem. That's a mistake.
They've already
it's a
told
mistake.
You. They've Vince, the tie's been around for 100 years.
That doesn't mean it's right.
I understand that. But they've already told you, with it being around for a century, it's never going anywhere.
Yeah, and that's a mistake. I'm
not arguing with you that it is.
Okay.
Or it isn't.
Yeah.
But
that's
the fact that it's been around for a century in this sport tells you it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, I agree that they've made it very clear that it's not going anywhere because they could have done college overtime. Everybody, it's not like this is some, like, oh my God, I've been digging through threads in the deepest levels of the internet and what I've found.
They view college football as an inferior product, which it is.
Which it's basically the same product now.
It's really not.
It is
not
with better
not
players.
Not to the rank and file of the NFL who've been making NFL decisions for 50 years. They don't view college football in the same window as them. They view it as beneath them. And they view the overtime as beneath them. I'm telling you.
Yeah, oh,
I would
clearly.
I would bet it.
They
would
clearly
bet it.
Hate it.
They hate it. It's dumb. It goes away from the entire idea of the way the game is played for the first 60 minutes of the game. That's why they'll never do it.
If they wanted to do one overtime quarter and then they go, okay, we played a full overtime like hockey did, which was, hey, here's overtime for a while. They had like overtime and then it was, okay, now we go to the shootout. I could live with that. I could live with that. You play a whole extra quarter to try to break the tie because it's so ludicrous that it ended in a tie. So you go, okay, let's play another quarter. If that ends in a tie also, you got to break the tie. You got to find something to do it. That's why I'm all in on the two-point conversion shootout. You got to end it. Okay, this team's over here, run a play. All right, you got it, you didn't. This team's over here, you run a play. You got it, you didn't. You do a couple of rounds, and it's done. But to still be trying to figure out the basics of overtime with a league that's this popular, with so many bright people that are involved in the league and still have ties on the table, when the whole point is to literally break the tie, why do you play overtime? You only play when there's a tie and you want to stop the tie. That is it. That's the only reason. You don't just go, you know, this game's been fun. Let's get another couple of quarters here. Hey, remember the Rams and the Chiefs in Kansas City? They had that like 2 years ago, that game that was in the 50s. And it was the greatest game of football you've ever seen in your life. Man, this is just so much fun. Let's just do another quarter. What do you think? Let's call Sean McVay on the other sideline. Hey, Sean, you want to do another quarter? Yeah, I think we should do another quarter. Let's do overtime. It's a tie. That's why. So break it. Kills me. Absolutely kills me. 855-212-4227. That's how you join the show. 855-212-4227. I'm a very frustrated Vince Quinn with you on CBS Sports Radio. You can join the show on Twitter at Frustrated Vince Quinn. No, it's at It's Vince Quinn. But Twitter, Instagram, that's how you find me there. When we come back, by the way, there are some changes with the sports landscape right now, and we need to examine the data. That is next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews, or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Dollar Shave Club delivers premium razors without premium prices. Get close, comfortable six-blade shaves, swift rinse and four blades for thicker hair, and translucent shave butter for precision. Visit DollarShaveClub.com/homerun. Use promo code HOMERUN for 20% off.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run Finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart. For a healthier you, Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with confidence unleashed.
Bitcoin might sound complicated, but the Gemini credit card makes it so simple. Use it like any credit card. Buy lunch, gas, or your weekly groceries, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight to your account. No annual fee. And right now, you can grab a $200 Bitcoin intro bonus. It's the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stash. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. Issued by WebBank. In order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice, and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.